Welcome to Shiur in Svarno Parshas Re'eh. Towards the end of Perek Yud Beis, Torah tells us as follows: Ki Yachris Hashem Elokecha Sagoyim. It's Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Chavtes. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu cuts off, he annihilates the various nations. Asher Ato Avoshama L'Reshes Osomi Ponecha. The nations whom you're coming into Eretz Yisrael to take over their land, v'yorashto osam, yoshavto b'yard sam, when you defeat them and settle in their lands, yishomer lecha pentinokesh achareyem, acharei yishomdo miponecha. Be very, very careful, lest you be ensnared by these nations, even after they no longer exist. You might be ensnared by the legacy which these nations leave behind. Specifically, ufentidrosh leloheyem leimor, lest you inquire after their gods, saying as follows: Echo Yavdu Hagoyim Ha'elas Eloheyem. How did these nations serve their gods? Ve'esa Kein Gam Oni. I will do the same. I will follow whatever they did in worshiping their gods. Losasechem Hashem Elokecha. Don't do that to Hashem. Ki Chotoavas Hashem Asher Sone. Asu Leloheyem. Everything which Hashem hates, every abomination which Hashem hates, they performed in the service of their gods. Kigamis b'neiam v'yaspinoseim yisrufu v'aish le'eloheyam. They burn their own sons and daughters. They burn them in fire as a form of worship to their gods. You know, they engage in these despicable, horrific kind of practices. So certainly that's not something you want to imitate. The simple reading of the psukim seems to indicate the following. You're going to come into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to inquire after the types of avodah zarah, of idolatry that were practiced by those who came before, and be very, very careful even after those nations are no longer there, but you know, they'll still be a record in some sense, whether there's still some practice of the avodah zarah which is there, or some written record of the practice of the avodah zarah. Don't be ensnared by the kind of idolatry and the horrific practices which they used to engage in. Which certainly would be true and certainly would be a very sound advice, you know, to put it mildly, coming from, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu to Klal Yisrael. The question is, what's the chiddush? What's so novel? What needs to be said about these psukim? You know, had these psukim not been said, would we have thought that, you know, the Jews coming into Eretz Yisrael could engage in the Avodah Zarah, the worship, the idolatrous worship, which had been followed by the nations who had lived there previously? I mean, the Torah is chock full with warnings against idolatry. What's the chiddush? What's the novel idea which is being conveyed over here? So here, the Svarno expresses an idea very succinctly, which really is expressed before by the Ramban. We've noted a few times, you know, the Svarno writes in his introduction, he wanted to make his commentary very, very concise, wanted to make it easy to read. So therefore, even though the Svarno draws on the comments and the perspectives of earlier Mefarshim, he doesn't spend an awful lot of time annotating, you know, his comments. You know, he doesn't talk about where he got the comments from, because that just would have burdened and, you know, it would have made the commentary unusually lengthy. But here he writes as follows: Ve'esa kein gam ani. You know, don't look at the way these nations worship their idols and say, huh, let me do the same. Meaning, she'evod es hakel yisborach ba'osam mine avodo shem ovdim lavodah zarah. The point, says the Svarno, and again, this is it's a one-line summary of a much longer Rambam. The point over here, says the Svarno, is as follows. The Torah is not telling us that we shouldn't worship Avodah Zarah when we come into Eretz Yisrael. It's not that that's not true, right? But that's so obvious that that's not what the Torah needs to tell us. The Torah is saying as follows. We'll come into Eretz Yisrael. We'll learn about the various practices that the non-Jews used in worshiping their gods. And we'll say, huh, that's a nice mode of worship. Why don't I adopt that mode of worship to serve Hashem? They had a certain way of serving their Avodah Zarah. So I'm not going to serve their Avodah Zarah. That goes without saying. But let me copy that mode of worship for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And that's how you read the Pasuk, according to the Svarno and the Ramban. Echo Yavdu Hagoyim Ha'eles Eloheihem. how did these nations worship their gods? The Esa came gam ami, I will do the same in worshiping Hashem. They had a certain style in worshiping their gods. I'm certainly not going to worship their gods, but let me copy their style. So here comes the Torah and says, even copying the style of worship of the non-Jews, insofar as, and even trying to transfer that to the worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is wrong. Lo sasechein l'Hashem Elokecha. Right? It reads very beautifully, according to the Ramban and the Sfarno. Don't do this towards Hashem, your God. Don't take their practices and you copy their modes of worship towards Hashem, your God. Why? Because their modes of worship include things which are disgusting. I mean, look, they burn their own children as human sacrifice to their gods. So even if you're not going to do that, which again would be prohibited, you see that not only is the object of their worship terrible, but their mode of worship is terrible as well. And even modes of worship which you think may be innocuous are not really quite as innocuous when you try to bring them over to a to a worship of Hashem, to Avodas Hashem kind of context. That's the way the Sfarno, again building on the Ramban, reads the Pasuk. And just let's to just use the next line in the Sforno very succinctly in Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Ki chotavas Hashem asher sami asi leloheim. They engage in all kinds of despicable kinds of worship for their gods. Ki omnam heim ovdim la'avodazara biktsas mine avodos nim osos eitzel hakel yisborach. They use certain types of worship. Not all types of worship. Some of the things they do may be inherently very beautiful. You know, if you looked at them, you know, in a vacuum. But there's certainly certain types of worship which they engage in, which are disgusting in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So as a result, we shouldn't copy any modes of worship from the idolatrous nations who inhabited Eretz Yisrael, because it's going to be very difficult to pick apart what's good, what's not good, just anything that they did, don't transfer into the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this...
Isn't
that also
because of
Al-Tasim? I'm sorry? Of B'chuk Oseim.
Already because of
Well, okay, so isn't it also already because of Baltosif? So the truth is, the very next Pasuk is going to introduce the idea of Baltosif for a second time in Chumash, right? So we'll see that the Sfarno is actually going to tie those things together, but there could be introductions of non-Jewish worship, modes of worship, that wouldn't necessarily be Baal Tosef. In other words, the classic example of Baal Tosef means that you add within the mitzvos of Hashem. So in other words, one of the classic examples of Baal Tosef is that a person decides he's going to have five parashios in his tefillin. Right? He's going to take 5 minim on Sukkos. So in other words, building an extra component into the mitzvah itself. Now it happens to be the Ramban over here, the Ramban, we'll see the Sforno in a minute, the Ramban over here comes along and he says there are actually two different types of Baal Tosef. There's the Baal Tosef of adding an extra parsha into the tefillin, in other words, augmenting what's already a mitzvah. And then the Ramban says, based on this pasuk, there's a second type of Baal Tosef, which means creating a mitzvah entirely. Right? In other words, if we got up and we decided that we're going to just make up a new mitzvah, you know, not that we're going to add within a mitzvah, we're going to make up a new mitzvah, so that the Ramban says that would also be a problem of Baal Tosef, which then gets involved in a very big discussion in halacha. So we have this whole thing called mitzvahs derabbanan, right? I mean, that would seem like the rabbis made up new mitzvahs, Hanukkah, Purim, you know, things like that. So why isn't every mitzvah derabbanan a violation of Baal Tosef? So the Rishonim talk about that. Again, that's a little bit far afield. I don't want to get bogged down in that question, but we should know it's a question. But I think it's possible to suggest that there might be a way of adapting a non-Jewish mode of worship that wouldn't be a Baal Tosef of either type. So in other words, let's say, to take a classic example, and this Rabbi Akiva Eger talks about in Shulchan Aruch, we have a visual in the back. The Rabbi Akiva Eger says that once upon a time, if you look in Tanakh, so Jews used to worship by picking up their arms, right? Vayifros kapav el Hashem. He lifted up his hands to the Ribono Shel Olam. You don't really see people doing that anymore. Why don't you see people doing that anymore? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, because that became a mode of worship of non-Jews, to lift up their hands to heaven, right? And with the possible exception of Lipa, so we don't encourage anymore, you know, for people to lift up their hands to their Father in heaven, you know? And as you daven, the Gemara says you're supposed to daven with your hands over your chest, you know, like a servant standing in front of his master. You know, so that wouldn't necessarily be baltosif, right? In other words, it's not that we're adding a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah now to lift up your hands in worship. It's a mode. It's a method of expression. So even that, which wouldn't be baltosif necessarily, the pasuk comes and says it's problematic. Yeah. Right. Right. So we'll talk about it. Let's talk about that. Okay. Yeah. One thing at a time. Okay. So this comment that started with the Ramban, and again is brought by the Sfarno, actually became a very singular focus that, as Rabbi Grafstein mentions, Rabbi Soloveitchik put his finger on in terms of an issue that was very contemporary in the American Jewish scene going back a couple of decades ago. You know, we're in 2021, and the trend, if there is any trend, you know, one sees a trend in some places where shuls that used to not have separate seating, that shuls that used to have mixed seating, are sometimes separating the genders and putting in a mechitza because they think that will attract more people to an old dying shul because nobody wants to daven in there anymore because, you know, the pews are mixed. But going back to the 1950s, the 1940s even, the opposite was the case. You know, the shuls that had mechitzas, that had balconies for the women, were considered to be archaic. And you don't want to say yes too loud, but people don't want to give away their ages. But, you know, the shuls with balconies and mechitzas were considered to be archaic. You know, that was, Orthodoxy was dying. You know, conservative Judaism was considered to be the wave of the future. And many, many synagogues, particularly outside of the New York area, but even in the New York area, you know, we're switching over to mixed seating out of a thought that, you know, that would be the wave of the future. That will attract the young people. That will bring, you know, the young people in great numbers into the shuls. And, you know, the separate seating is a thing of the past, which is going to disappear. So as hard as it is to imagine this in 2021, you know, in the 1950s, there were actually voices within Orthodoxy who thought that was a good idea. And, you know, it really was left to many of the Gedolei Yisrael of that time to come out very, very publicly and forcefully and say that this is a bad idea. And not only is it a bad idea, but it's also, it's prohibited to have mixed seating in the shuls. So then the opponents of that idea came back and they said, you say it's prohibited to have mixed seating in the shuls. Vu ishtate, where does it say that? I'll open up a Shulchan Aruch. Show me where it says that you're not allowed to have mixed seating in the shul. Show me where it says that you need mechitza in shuls. And the truth is, between us and everyone who's listening, you won't find it in Shulchan Aruch. It doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch anywhere that, you know, you have to have a mechitza in shul, otherwise it's not a kosher shul. It's kind of assumed in certain halachas, but, you know, it's certainly not quite black on white, you know, in a way that would make, you know, that would end the argument, you know, just by appealing to the Shulchan Aruch. So where is this prohibition against having mixed pews in the shul? So Soloveitchik very, very strongly said that if they were to have the men and women sitting together in shuls, it would be an issur d'oraisa. It would be a Torah prohibition. And not only that, it would be prohibited to daven in such a shul. And not only that, he told over the following story. He said, there was once a young, he was the Rav in Boston, so there was a young man who called me before Rosh Hashanah. He lived in a certain suburb outside of Boston. And he said, the only shul in town is a mixed seating synagogue. It may have been an Orthodox mixed seating synagogue, as strange as that sounds to us in 2021, but, you know, back in the 1950s, that was a phenomenon that wasn't unusual. So, you know, it was a totally traditional synagogue, except that they had mixed pews. So he said, you know, he asked Rav Soloveitchik, can I daven in such a shul? It's the only shul available. So Rav Soloveitchik said, you're not allowed to daven in the shul, better you should daven at home. So he called him up a few weeks before Rosh Hashanah, And he said, you know, I've been davening at home, but Rosh Hashanah is coming up. Can I go to shul to hear shofar? If the only shul in town is a shul with mixed pews. He said, you're not allowed to go to the shul to daven. You're not allowed to go to the shul to hear shofar. You're not allowed to go and, you know, and participate in the davening in that shul in any way whatsoever. Okay, so then he calls him back. He said, I spoke to the Baal Tokeya, and I asked, you know, I got this Rabbi Soloveitchik, I spoke to him, he doesn't want me davening in the shul. Would you mind blowing the shofar for me privately after the davening is over? And the Baal Tokeya said, no way, no how. You know, who are you? But how much money do you pay to the shul? You don't pay any money to the shul. I'm not blowing for you. You know, so the young fellow calls back Rosh Soloveitchik and says, you know, if I'm not going to go to the shul on Rosh Hashanah, so I'm not going to hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Soloveitchik told him, okay, so you won't hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah. It's better that you shouldn't hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah rather than David in that shul on Rosh Hashanah that has the mixed pews. So obviously he was very, very strong about this idea. But the question is, where does that come from? I mean, hearing shofar on the first day Rosh Hashanah is a mitzvah saseh d'oraisa. It's a positive mitzvah that comes from the Torah. I can hear it. Okay, it's not so tzniyistic, you know, to have the men and women together. But if the guy would have just walked in, you know, during tkiyah shofar, listen to 30 kolos, and then go home, what would be so terrible about that? I mean, that it really, like, he should give up the mitzvah of hearing shofar and shul so as not to participate in a mixed seating kind of arrangement in the shul. It sounds like a very hard psak to understand. And Rav Soloveitchik wasn't saying it as polemics. He was saying it as psak halacha. So, like, where does that come from? So Rav Soloveitchik based this idea on this Ramban and ultimately this Sfarno on this Pasuk, and he said as follows. Where do you think the idea comes from of having mixed seating in the synagogue? Ultimately it comes from the church. One of the early reforms that the church made. We know that the church, you know, Christianity originally was an offshoot of Judaism. You know, it was originally Jews who just had a mistaken notion about Mashiach, but in the original manifestation of Christianity, they were Shomer Shabbos and they were Shomer Kashrus, they kept mitzvahs. And then as Christianity wanted to broaden its appeal to the greater world, so they dropped all of the mitzvahs and it became a totally different religion that was unrecognizable, had no recognizable connection to Judaism. So one of the things that they did early on was to have the men and women sit together in the church. Because in the temples, you know, the idolatrous temples, the people they were trying to reach out to, they had no notion of the men and women sitting separately. That was entirely a Jewish notion. So to make Christianity more appealing to the idolatrous masses, one of the things they got rid of was the notion of separate seating in a house of worship. So it's something which is overtly Christological, said Rav Soloveitchik. And the synagogues that are introducing mixed seating are consciously trying to imitate the church. They're taking a mode of worship which comes from outside of Judaism, and they're introducing it into Judaism in the thought that this is going to make Judaism more attractive, more palatable, you know, whatever it happens to be. So said Rav Soloveitchik, that's mamish this pasuk with the Ramban, and again, we're seeing now the Sfarno. Echo yavdu agoyim ha'elis Eloheyem. You know, you'll look around at what the non-Jews do and the modes of worship that they use in worshiping their gods. Ve'esa kein gam ani. Oh, that looks nice for me. Let me take that mode of worship and transfer that into the context of what we do in shul. So Rav Soloveitchik said, so, you know, participating in a mixed seating worship service is actually the very participation itself is a violation of an Issa D'Oraisa. It's a violation of this lav, this lo sase that comes from the Torah. So we know, I mean, there's Mishnayos and Sukkah that talk about how you're not even supposed to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan in order to be able to hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah. You know, if the shofar is in a place that's only accessible via the violation of an Issa D'Rabbanan, you're not allowed to do that in order to get the shofar. So certainly, if the only way to hear shofar, which is a mitzvah saseh, is to violate a mitzvah lo saseh, lo sasun kein l'Hashem elokeichem, you shouldn't take this mode of worship and adapt it into the shul, into a Jewish mode of worship. So that's what Soloveitchik was saying, not just polemically, not just hashkafically, but lahalacha. He was saying that, you know, that's the halachic thought process that would prohibit somebody like that, you know, from participating in a mixed seating service, even if it means it comes at the expense of the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar. Right, interesting. So, I think it's not so much the entry into the shul which bothered Rav Soloveitchik; it's the participation, in the worship service. So, in other words, to the extent to which you're being part of that worship service, meaning you're standing outside, but you know you're being yotzei the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar in the context of something which is a service which mimics a church service in that regard. You know, I think that aspect was what bothered him, if I understood. In other words, he didn't suggest to the guy, you know, lahalacha, he didn't suggest to the guy just go stand outside the, you know, the synagogue and hear the shofar from outside. So the impression I have is that wouldn't have done it. You know, it's not just where you happen to be standing, it's the fact that you're part of this greater issue which is going on. So that application of this Ramban, again, with the Svarno, according to the Rav Soloveitchik, was something that, you know, wasn't simply a pshat in the pasuk, but had halachic implications as well. And that leads then into the next pasuk, which Yossi alluded to a few moments ago, the lead pasuk in Perek Yud Gimel. Now again, here we also talk about Christianity the second time tonight. We encounter this phenomena we've encountered numerous times before, where the division of the Chumash into prakim doesn't necessarily correspond to the way Torah Shebaal Peh understands the Chumash. And we have to just remind ourselves, the Chumash was divided, the Tanakh was divided into chapters by the Catholic Church. So in other words, the chapter divisions, which we use, because the first people who printed Svarim were non-Jews, right? The original Svarim were printed not in a Jewish context, so they just adopted the chapter divisions of the Catholic Church to printing Svarim, and that's how we have the chapter divisions that we have, but we can't necessarily rely on the chapter divisions for helping us understand the Chumash. So here's a prime example, and you see it right in the Chumash. The first pasuk of Perek Yud Gimel, obviously it's a new Perek, but the way the Torah breaks it up is that Psukim Lamed, Lamed Aleph, Choftes, Lamed, Lamed Aleph, and Aleph are all part of the same paragraph. And then the paragraph ends after Pasuk Aleph. You have a Psucha, you have an end of a paragraph, and then Pasuk Beis begins a new paragraph in the Torah itself. So clearly, from the point of view of our Mesorah, Pasuk Aleph and Perek Yud Gimel is linked to the previous three Psukim. You know, it's all part of one unit. What is Pasuk Aleph and Perek Yud Gimel? Eis kol hadavar asher anochi metzave eschem. All the things which I am commanding you, also Sishmeru Lasos, you should follow that. Lo Sosei Falava, Lo Sigra Mimenu. Don't add to it, don't subtract from it. Right? Bal Tosef, Bal Tigra. Don't add a mitzvah, don't subtract the mitzvah. And we alluded to before, the Ramban over here asked the Kasha, why do we need to be Mosif, a Pasuk about Bal Tosef? Why do we have to add it? Why do we have to have a Pasuk that tells us don't add and don't subtract mitzvahs? We already had such a Pasuk back in Parshas Vayeschanan. Right? Why do you have two psukim in the Torah that tell you don't add, don't subtract? We know that already, right? So again, we answer, the Ramban says the two types of Bal Tosef. The Svarno gives a different answer. He says this pasuk is just following up on the previous statement of the Chumash, don't copy the modes of worship of the non-Jews. Why? Ki ulai sosif davar nimos etzlo yisparach. This is not an independent isser of Bal Tosef. This is the Torah giving you a reason why you shouldn't copy the modes of worship of the non-Jews. Because you'll copy something which you think is innocuous, but you'll end up copying and adding on something which is disgusting in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kimo sheyiyem tirtzu lahosif mini avodos lokel yisparach. The same way, if you want to try to add modes of worship to Hashem, shelif amim, if you try to add stuff, you may end up adding things which are terrible. So, you know, in other words, even though you might think that adding something might be the best idea ever, if you end up adding something you know, the expression kol amosav gareya, sometimes adding means subtracting. You add on something which you think is wonderful, but is actually a disgusting mode of worship in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And similarly, v'lo sigra mimenu, don't subtract from the mitzvos either, that is to say, afilu besur sibas ha-mitzvah b'einecha. Even if you think the reason for the mitzvah no longer applies. Ke'inyin shlomo ba'amrani arbe v'lo osur. Famous example of Shlomo HaMelech, right? So the king is told in Parsha Shoftim, don't have many wives, don't have many horses, don't amass gold and silver, because if you do all of these things, you know, it's going to lead to, you know, being led astray from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Shlomo HaMelech famously says, okay, that's not me. They're not talking about me over there. I'm the kind of guy, I can do all of these things, and I'll walk between the raindrops, it's going to be fine. You know, so what happens with Shlomo HaMelech? So again, he goes ahead, he has many wives, he has a lot of gold and silver, he has a lot of horses, and exactly what the Torah predicts is going to happen, you know, happens to Shlomo HaMelech. So in other words, don't try to outsmart yourself, you know, even when you think that adding will make things better, or even when you think when subtracting isn't going to hurt anything in any way, the Torah here is illustrating. That's why the mitzvah is repeated over again. You see that the same way the Torah says, don't add modes of worship to HaKadosh Baruch, to Hashem's service, don't try to outsmart, you know, the Torah, you know, in trying to add or subtract because you think it makes things better. In point of fact, you know, the way you look at things is in all likelihood erroneous and is only going to hurt rather than is going to help. Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer Rabsa HaKadosh Baruch.